Welcome to this combined Open Stories Foundation podcast with Christy Money of Mormon Transitions, Dan Witherspoon of Mormon Matters, and myself from A Thoughtful Faith. There has been tremendous personal, community, and familial pain following the United States elections. And so we've gathered ourselves together to cheer ourselves up somewhat, to give ourselves some advice and maybe offer some wisdom to our listeners. How do we overcome some of the difficulties that have arisen because of this markedly divisive political campaign and all of its aftermath? So welcome to Christy and Dan to this Open Stories Foundation hosts podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk to the New Zealander here, guys. You know, I'm just an observer. I'm watching this thing play out, and all I'm seeing is just waves of pain.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's waves of elation in certain corners, you know, of the Mormon bloggerverse as well, as certainly within our LDS communities and things too. But yeah, I did kind of almost want to have a disclaimer at the first that I know that a lot of listeners to our podcast are not necessarily Democrats. They're not necessarily Hillary fans. Many have legitimate reasons for voting for Republican ideas on various policies and, you know, various emphases that come with, you know, the Republican stuff. And so I don't want anybody to feel like if, you know, I express personal sadness or something on this, that I want to honor and recognize that everybody has a right to their own political opinions. And this won't be political at all as much as, like you said, it's more like checking in with ourselves and emotional states and what we're hearing from family members and what we're hearing in our wards and how are we, you know, wanting to go ahead with some kind of, renewed energy after what feels like a gut punch to lots of us.
Exactly. And it's nonpartisan, but, you know, there is tremendous, whatever side of the political spectrum you fall on, there's tremendous, and I don't think I've ever seen it in my living memory, the kind of pain and vitriol and divisiveness that's erupted. So
yes,
we want to address that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would add that maybe because you're right, Dan, some people are elated, some are in pain. So, you know, maybe I was thinking of a word to accurately capture what I've seen too. And I would maybe say disconnection, people are just, I think, isolated right now. And, maybe are a little bit worried about, what their family members or their, their coworkers or board members or, you know, how they voted. And so it's leading to a lot of isolation and concern. Like, is there anyone else who understands or who can I reach out to, but I'm worried that they'll think something completely differently. I don't know. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of isolation and sadness that way, whether they were happy or sad with the results.
Hey, I've got a question. Mm-hmm. Can what has happened in the United States be leveraged for a new kind of healthiness, a new kind of awareness, a new kind of consciousness? I mean, it feels like hashtag too soon, but what are your thoughts? Is this a good place, do you think, for a reformation, a new kind of way of being in relationship with your, you know, your polity? Or is this just all disaster? Is the sky going to fall down?
Yeah, you know, Gina, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm actually thinking that something needed to happen like this. I happened to be watching the ABC coverage, you know, when the things were coming in and it was pretty clear what the result was going to be. And, you know, they're talking about how did all the pollsters miss this or something like that. Somebody used the term a primal scream. You know, and I said in some ways that's kind of a couple of friends of mine had been talking for a couple months ahead of time that, you know, if there is this large body of the electorate who's disenfranchised, who is afraid every day, who the American dream has lost it for them, they just need to be heard. And if you keep not hearing them, you're going to at some point, you know, have something terrible happen. Not that terrible things aren't happening all the time anyway, but in some ways this is like a pressure release valve to me. This is in some ways just a you know, I hope it's kind of a death rattle, you know, in the sense that it's you know, be heard, let's see what you're all about, you know, show us what you truly do intend. You've kind of had this diffuse energy that now you're saying, all I know is I want change, so let's see what change looks like for you. And I think that'll be clarifying for the people that voted that direction. It'll be clarifying for the rest of us, and I kind of like it. My other thing that I'd sort of said that was somewhat of a peacemaking thing for me is, you know, as a student of philosophy, I understand the Hegelian dialectic, and I'm sure you know that, Gina, through your studies of world history and trends. But that's that idea that, you know, societies advance by, you know, swinging one way and then swinging the other way, and then sort of emerging in the middle is the synthesis. So they call it the thesis, the antithesis, and then the synthesis that generally will move us forward. And so maybe we're seeing, in my mind, it's the antithesis, but it could be something that leads to a new and a better synthesis going forward. So that's at least my initial 2 cents.
And I think you're right, Dan, that there is a way in which social behavior comes to right itself. And so if there are extremes or if there's pressure in the system, it'll eventually release. And somebody asked me, who do you hope would win the US election? And I have reservations about, obviously, reservations about both of the candidates. And my thought was, whatever the United States deserves.
Yeah.
Which wasn't received particularly well, but getting what you need, even if it feels like a wound, is often a way of dealing with what lies beneath. Yeah. And my sense about what the situation in the United States is, there's a hell of a lot that's lying beneath.
Yes. Yeah. And I think we've seen it now. It's erupted to the surface. Now it's, you know, we can see it. We can expose it to the healing light, as, you know, Martin Luther King said about, you know, racism and things like this. You have to let the ugliness and the pain. And that's why I kind of like that term primal scream. You know, this is me bellowing that this is really, it is this bad for me. It's coming to the surface. Now it serves as a mirror. It's good to look in the mirror every once in a while. And that's what this election kind of has shown to me, is a mirror of where we're at. And that's just feedback. It doesn't mean necessarily, you know, right or wrong. It's, you know, just look at the mirror, and that's just where it is right now. And now you got to go to work.
Right. And we're going to talk about what that work is in a minute. But Christy, what are your thoughts? Is the sky falling, or is this something, you know, is there a silver lining in this?
I have a hard time, honestly, to just, I hope not to get too emotional here, but a hard time seeing a silver lining, to be honest. This is very, I think this election, I just kept thinking of people who are afraid and scared about what's going to happen to them and their family. So I'll reframe the silver lining thing, and if that's okay. I mean, don't want to pull a Bednar necessarily. Like, let me rephrase the question.
and translate this exactly as I say it. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna translate it or anything. I'll just tell a story about how here in Athens, a 4-year-old goes to a 80% minority school, mostly Latina, and our PTA president, who isn't Mormon, she was also, you know, really, really sad after, you know, the day after the election, and a hard time, you know, just getting up and you know, taking her kid to school even, but she. She talked about how she decided to go into the during lunch and just talk to these kids, and she felt better making that person to person connection. Like, so she wasn't online, you know, that that isolation, that loneliness, seemed to heal as she talked with these kids, and they did express their fears and their concerns, but she also sensed a strength that she wouldn't have gotten online or through just assuming what was going on in these communities, and so she came back from there that experience, like, really strengthened, like, okay, the kids are, you know, these are, you know, voters in 10, 15 years, you know, their future is bright because they are, committed to equity, to fairness. They're, even in the face of this, you know, understandable fear, in her opinion, she could see how they were going to make it. And so that's why, just to bring it back to a practical level, you'll hear the theme of this podcast from my perspective is to go out and try to connect face to face with as many people as possible. Intimacy is such an intricate dance, right? You just don't want to just like tell everybody, you know, about exactly how you're feeling and exactly what you need. And there are, I think, layers. But it really helps especially if you're in a lot of pain right now, or if you're feeling really alone, to just reach out and see what happens when you give connection a chance. It's so hard, though. It's so hard when a lot of people are just really either depressed or unsure or worried that, like I said in the beginning of the podcast, if anyone else feels similarly. So, for what it's worth, I'm all about connection in this episode.
Yay. Right, yeah. And so what you're saying, both of you, is that America has put its citizens, each other actually, in a really tight ideological spot and a tight emotional spot in relationship, yeah, with each other. And mm-hmm. But the other thing is that it's going to make them deal with some really profound social wounds. And so, Chrissy, you're suggesting actually reach out with compassion to each other, be vulnerable with each other, because, you know, in some ways that's going to alleviate those wounds.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that isolation. Mm-hmm. Hey, another question that I have, and John, edit that out, Dan and Christy, we talked somewhat about maybe addressing the sacred trinity of what to think about this election, how to feel about the fallout after the election, and what to do. So three things: the mind, the heart, and the body. So I want to, maybe in the spirit of trying to heal, to frame a quick discussion about what would be useful for people to think about, to cognitively process. What information would be useful for people to make sense of what happened, at least intellectually? What do you think, Dan? Let's start with you.
Well, okay, let me try that. That's a good one, Gina. You know, just big framings. This is just, again, realize this is day 8 after the results. And so my heart's heavy still. I don't have my energy that I used to have. It's just like, you know, you wake up the next morning and realize this really happened, and I was one of these, damn, I have to work even harder than I, you know, was already working to try to do good things. And so just know that there's that emotion there. But when I go to my head level, like you're kind of asking us to do here, I do have a few things which I draw on, and that is, you know, it's, people are people, and I have certain gifts and other people have other gifts, and not everybody has the same gifts, and certain people pay attention to elections and others don't, and some people vote because of emotions or out of fear, and some people vote out of truly, you know, studying it out and things like this, and how, you know, somebody who may like this about a candidate and they don't like this about that same candidate, but they have the same thing going on with the other one. What's the calculus? What's the algebra that, you know, leads them to vote the certain ways that they do. I just have tried to not make anybody into a bad, you know, bad, sick, and wrong, you know, that category. Everybody's coming from their place that they are, and, you know, that's the reality. I come from the place I am, from the things that I've studied, from my autobiography, from my class, my race, my things. All these things are a mixture for me, and I just have to grant that for everybody. So I am not one of these guys that wants to simply say those damn idiots left and right. I mean, I obviously I did that the night of the election. How could anybody, you know, have chosen this or something like that? But when I step back and go into my head, I just have to take it out of anything like that and just simply say people are motivated by what they're motivated by, and I just have to meet the world where it is. And so what Christy says when she says her thing is going to be all about going out and connecting with people, I'm not one who is going to shy away, for instance, from all the Republicans in my ward. I mean, we actually do have some good Democrats in the ward, and we're well known among the ward as being the, you know, kind of the liberal progressives within the ward. But we love our conservative ward members and friends, and I'm not going to shy away from them. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not thinking any worse of them today than I did, you know, pre-election or something like that. I'm just going to work with who I am, what my values are, let those things kind of shine, and I'm just not gonna, you know, hand wring. I don't know. That's my initial. Probably.
Okay. Again, probably can boring. I push it a little deeper then?
Yeah, please.
Because what I'm hearing is an empathic move on your part. It's full of grace. Like, well, you know, if I can respect you, then it frees me from needing to change you. It frees me from a desire for an outcome that maybe you can't show up with.
It would be a very long road to get you to change. Yes.
One of the things that I've noticed in response is that a lot of people are personalizing this. They're not seeing it as a systemic thing. Like there are systemic issues. I feel, you know, maybe you can push back on that, but systemic issues that I feel would be really useful for people to see, to be clear about.
Okay. Please.
When it comes to an America, so we're talking about ideological systems, we're talking about programs, we're talking about political philosophies and political economies. Like all these, this is at the heart of any kind of political event. Yet, not.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to think emotion was the primary mover here.
Really?
Appeals to, you know, fear, blame, you know, othering, you know, just this vague notion of change. You know, I don't really sense that this was a very ideologically driven campaign, because nobody, for one thing, could really pin down Trump, you know, because we knew him before he was a candidate, and then we knew him as a candidate, and we knew that he was, you know, doing a role. You know, and he had to say what he needed to say to do certain things. And I think we're seeing here post-election that there are certain things that he's, you know, not, you know, as strong on as president-elect as he was a candidate for. And so I felt like his whole candidacy, his whole movement was not ideological. It was emotional appeals to people who were disenfranchised.
Exactly. So he was leveraging the emotional investment people had in whatever outcome it was. But there's still ideology behind it. Like, sure. People are still grappling with it.
It's there. It's there. But in this election, more than others, I wasn't worrying about, you know, Democratic principles versus Republican principles. I was worried about what would the country be like in the hands of somebody who, you know, I can't respect his mind, I can't respect, you know, his you know, commitment to the truth, etc. So I guess I'm moving into bashing area here. I'm sorry, but it didn't feel to me like a regular election.
Wasn't a regular election, but it's still an outcome. It's still almost a predictable outcome of the confluence of various historical and political events. And if you look at it as predictable, so for instance, I just want to pitch this really, really quickly, and I don't want to get all politically geeky on you, but the Democrats failed to appeal to the working classes they really lent into this idea of identity politics as the mainstay of their, you know, their grist, and have not done anything to stem the rise of neoliberalism. So what you get is this disenfranchised people who kind of know that something's up. They know that something's up. You know, when the jobs go and, you know, you've got high unemployment and you've got problems with inflation, you've got economies tanking, they know something's up. But the Democrats failed to respond as they should, as the party on the left, to the class politics that arose as a result. So it's no wonder. Now, so Trump comes along and he's able to leverage that anger. You know, he's not going to do anything about it because he's part of the establishment that he says that, you know, he's going to destroy. So, I mean, that helps me personally to think more clearly about how this possibly happened. Like, if we just sit with our emotional response to it, that's going to get untidy,
right?
I think. A clean response allows us and to think about the system that nurtured this moment. Actually,
just helps takes
it just takes some of that weight off your emotional shoulders, so you can deal with the emotions in a clean way. Anyway, that's enough for me. What about you, Christy?
Well, I actually, to piggyback off of what you're saying, I absolutely agree, Gina, that sitting with the messiness of our emotions, that is actually, it's pretty much a cognitive process at first. I mean, because we have to literally retrain ourselves intellectually to be okay with the messiness, to, I'll put my shrink hat on and, I think that we receive a lot of myths ever since, you know, we're little, or, you know, in other words, mistaken beliefs, about our emotions, and that can get in the way of our, you know, ability to regulate them. And so I imagine, like, there might be a lot of listeners out here right now who are having maybe some difficulty regulating their emotions, because I mean, it's like a roller coaster, right? I mean, I know a lot of people I've talked to post-election feel that way. Like, one minute there, you know, there's disbelief, then there's despair, and then, you know, for those who, you know, were happy about their election results, I mean, there's just still a bit of, from what I've heard, a shock that, well, this really did happen. how am I going to talk to people about this? And so it's incredibly important to use our intellect to challenge some myths about, like, for, let me just give you some concrete examples that like emotions make you weak, or that there's an ending point, like, well, I should be over this by now, right? Like, oh, well, why is the election still bothering me? You know, I need to be, you know, I need to be stronger than that. Why can't I get it together? So, you know, those are some I think mistaken beliefs about, you know, how human emotions work. And if we use our minds to maybe challenge that a little, to be like, wait a minute, I need to be more gentle with myself. And that's a cognitive process, right? And then the emotional consequence comes next. So, I mean, for this particular tangent I'm on at the moment, the theme is to use your cognitive abilities to maybe be a little gentler with yourself if you're feeling a little overwhelmed right now. So there's
that. Yeah, and I think you pointed in our pre-conversation, our pre-podcast recording conversation, that there are some links between maybe faith transition and faith crisis and this.
Yes, thanks for bringing that up.
I believe it. And I just want to, because one of my experience, like, you know, maybe being married to a reasonably orthodox Mormon, now I can get caught up with all of the infuriating stuff that I feel he's doing, usually directly at me, you know, like it can get very messy and tangled. But if I take a deep breath and say, okay, what's happening here? How is my husband being socially constructed? What good, what benefit is this having for him? What is he experiencing when he experiences a woman who has become markedly different than the woman he sat across the altar with? Now, I can kind of, you know, it's not like I diminish my feeling, but I allow my thoughts to untangle the emotional mess. Mm-hmm. And it helps me see with much more clarity. So if we take that to the political system, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. It didn't happen because evil people were evilly disposed. It happened over many generations. It was bound to happen under the particular circumstances. There's just such a confluence of issues. And that makes me breathe easier, because if I can see that there are issues there, there are actual physical and kind of tangible issues, systemic issues, then I can deal with the issues. Nice. And it untangles my emotional investment in it, mm-hmm. which can be quite kind of, you ask my husband how kind of dangerous my emotional investment in things can be.
Yeah. Hey, well, that was awesome. I love both of your comments on that, you guys.
Okay. So are we agreed then, maybe some systems thinking and depersonalizing, doing some thinking that depersonalizes it for a minute, actually can be both clarifying but also an emotional relief?
Good. Yeah, I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you feel good about that, Christy? Have you got a testimony of that?
I would like to bear my testimony of that.
It is a good seed. I have felt my heart swell. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get to the other part then. The way that we deal with our emotions, because I'm not the psychologist here, but my thought is that our feelings point more specifically to an emotion. So if I'm feeling really angry about it, and I go deeply, I turn inward, what I'm probably pointing to is my fear of something, and mm-hmm. that's much more helpful than my anger. Do you know what I mean? Maybe Christy, can you mm-hmm. kind of
sure
help me out?
Yeah, you're right that we in the biz, you know, talk about anger as a secondary emotion to an infinite number of feelings, and one of which, and I think a very common one, especially right now post-election, is fear. Another is, you know, possibly betrayal or confusion. Like I said earlier, isolation, loneliness, and you know what? But what we see, it's like the tip of the iceberg. What we see is the anger. So yeah, we can totally talk about emotion regulation. I'm happy to go wherever you'd like.
Emotional regulation. I don't really understand what you're talking about.
Sure, just
it's foreign to me.
I understand. I get it. So, I don't know. I imagine a lot of listeners right now, they're feeling a bit overwhelmed. So, you know, being able to find that balance. Dan, you talked earlier about the dialectic, how often we feel like we're swinging from extreme to extreme. And, you know, that balance, I think the first step is just, you know, practicing observation, and, you know, just taking a step back from the anger, and not judging yourself for that anger, right? Like I said earlier, being gentle with yourself, just saying, okay, you know, this is happening. And we know from you know, neuropsychology that just, you know, being able to label an emotion is therapeutic in and of itself. So, and when we're caught up in the moment emotionally and we're feeling overwhelmed, it can be incredibly difficult to just take that step back to identify, you know, what you're feeling. So, I mean, it's actually relatively simple. And I mean, it's one of the first steps, but something that a lot of people feel good about, like, okay, I can do that. You know, I can, you know, name what's going on with me right now, and take it a step at a time. So, for you listeners out there who are feeling, you know, a wide variety of emotions, especially if there's some, you know, relational difficulties going on with, you know, maybe families or sending, you know, group texts. You know, some are elated, some are miserable, and you really, really want to, you feel an urge to, like, okay, I'm going to respond to that. You know, I got to do that. I got to do something. I would just suggest, if you're feeling an urge to do something like that, just maybe do it. This will sound very touchy-feely, so work with me here. But if you imagine that your urges are like a surfboard, and, you know, you're standing on the board, you know, riding the waves. And we're not saying, you know, do it or don't at this point. We're just saying pause. You know, take pause, and notice any urge to, on the flip side, avoid something. Like, if you avoiding connection, you know, maybe observe that too. Like, okay, what's going on with me there? This is all about, I think, especially right now when tensions are high, emotions are high, just slowing it down a little bit. And I think that might be helpful for some people right now who are in emotional overload right now.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to get back to your comments. Yeah, I want to get back to what you say in a minute. Dan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to head kind of in that same area. I'll just, you know, rely on my good friend Phil McLemore and things that he's taught me through the years. He was the first one, maybe 15, 18 years ago when I met him, to first introduce me to this idea of how much of my life I live in reaction instead of actual, you know, having that moment to be an actor instead of a reactor. And so, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. he is a meditation teacher and things like this, but there's all sorts of ways to get to this point to where there's that moment or that gap that you can sort of say, I can identify, I'm sort of witnessing myself having these emotions, I'm witnessing myself doing this. And there, but then you have that gap before you act one way or the other. So, you know, there's this idea that, you know, 90-something% of our life, we're living in reaction mode. We're on autopilot and things like this. And so the goal through meditation and these different kinds of exercises is to strengthen that ability to see what's happening, not feel attached to it, see it for what it is, and then choose, you know, to go with it or not. So I think that kind of fits with your thing. And so, you know, spiritual practice obviously is one thing that can help you regulate your emotion. And if you want to buy into it, at least, I don't know how many people who listen to this will always be comfortable with spiritual language. But, you know, I look at my morning devotional as that 20 to 30 minutes every day where I'm deliberately trying to have my highest self be the presenting self, you know. I'm trying to get in touch with that sense of connection, you know, with these highest ideals, with this highest self, you know, the eternal self within me and things like that. And then that sort of has its presence in my world the rest of the day. It's like a little backlighting to the rest of the world or something as it is, or it adds a little significance that, hey, even this little thing I do or that little thing that I don't do, there's some significance to that. So that's at least where I'm at. I think in somewhat the same ball game as you, Christy, there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love it, Dan. Mm-hmm.
One thing I noticed, I'm just going to challenge you both a little bit here, was one thing I noticed coming up in social media and my other conversations was that there was a difference between the way that people of color responded to the outcome. Eventually there was a difference. Immediately there was fear, there was anger, there was worry. And for a moment, just for a moment, I felt a sense of hope from people of color who were able to say, now you sense my fear, and you maybe now you can see in some part the anger that I have and my worry for my children.
Yeah.
And then it quickly dissipated into, let's find unity, let's find love, let's find compassion, let's sign up for a mindfulness course, let's do some meditation, light a candle, eat chocolate. And then there was this fury, this backlash from people of color who were like, hold on, for a moment we had you, for a moment, and you get to move on. But we don't, we're stuck with this.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just sort of I want, you know, we need to attend to our feelings. But for me, something like anger and fear is good muscle to charge and energize our desire for change. So I'm not sure that anger is always something that we should be in, you know, afraid of.
Oh, well, I mean, totally. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, because, I mean, another way of to be afraid of it would be to avoid. I mean, I'm definitely not about avoiding anger. I think letting it inform us and inform our next steps through through empathy. I think what you were describing earlier, correct me if I'm wrong, was that moment where it was an empathy experiment where a lot of white people were, you know, feeling that shock, that anger, that fear, and people of color were saying, you know, hey, you know, this is how we feel all the time.
Yeah.
Yes. The system doesn't work for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I would say to, you know, to not lose sight of that, to let it inform next steps with, you know, again, to bring up the dialectic, you know, to not be in dialectical behavioral terms, they call it emotional mind, where we're so overwhelmed by emotion that it's almost paralyzing. It can be hard to, you know, for people who are incredibly depressed, even get out of bed. For people who are incredibly, so angry that it's hard to, it's hard to concentrate, because even in a state of mania, you're just like, okay, I am just radiating anger and I don't know what to do. You know, so that maybe be an example of emotional mind. Then rational mind, you know, on the other extreme would be, cool and calculating and figure out next steps, like completely devoid of emotion. And that's, first of all, hard to achieve. Maybe, you know, assassins or, they could do that, but that could be hard for the rest of us. So, you know, the balance is something that therapists call wise mind, so that you're aware of your emotions, you're letting them educate you and inform your next steps. And you're also, you know, using reason to, you know, figure out, okay, if a value, for example, I think you and I share, Gina, is empathy. Like, okay, how can I harness this empathy to do good? You know, to mobilize, you know, myself and my community, to be awakened, you know, so to speak. I think that's the
like
goal,
that.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
That idea of wise mind is brilliant. I like that.
Mm. Well, it's not mine. It's Marsha Linehan's, so founder of dialectical behavior therapy. So,
oh, you can take it. I don't mind.
Yeah. Oh, okay, sure.
Well, and I think, you know, when you first posed that question, Gina, about anger and the relationship, to me, it's just taking that anger and then just turning it a little bit towards just determination. You know, and that's kind of where I'm at on this.
Resolve.
Resolve. That's
absolutely
another great word. It's just like, you know, I've always felt like I've been a pretty careful watcher of the political scene, but now because of the extreme rhetoric, and if extreme things were to begin to be enacted, and, you know, if the Muslim registration and the, you know, the different ways to, you know, to mess with immigration law or something really do come forth in these really strong ways, I'm determining at this moment that I'm going to be far more politically active, you know, to be heard on these things. So, I mean, in some ways, I've been really, this election has been a gift, because I'm easy to go into my head, Gina, and think about the forces or the this or the that or the other thing. But because there was these promises that had such extreme action, should they go into place, man, I'm ready more than ever. So that's where I'm taking my anger.
Okay, so I have a question then. Do you think Mormons are good? This is for either of you. Do you think Mormons are, and this is such a big question, so just, you know, throw it out if you don't like it. Do you think Mormons are very good at owning emotional complexity and extremes? Because it seems to me that there's a lot of effort made not to be contentious or not to ruffle people's feathers, particularly among women in the church. So, you know, I'm wondering if that is maybe a little bit of a stumbling block in that broad spectrum of emotional experience is socially kind of diminished in our communities to a predictable set of emotional and acceptable reactions. Don't know.
I think that's pretty clear that that's the case. And I think one of the reasons that it happens is those who feel like they're in tension with the larger group self-select out, and so they're not in that congregation with them to where they're really heard. You know, I've been lucky enough to have whatever the constitution, the training, the, you know, chubby, you know, teddy bear looking kind of guy or whatever it would be, whatever this combination is, to sit there and be present with all these people and be, you know, presenting opinions and ideas for them that they never would have, you know, thought of on a Sunday, or it would really probably have entered into their life. And I know not everybody's there, but part of the reason that we're so bad at this in general is, folks, we just need to be present. You know, it's interesting, you know, John DeLynn was going to join us for this, but had to drop out. But he posted something, it was either Sunday or Monday, that was really quite moving about him going to church and, you know, having some realizations about goodness of people and, you know, just that need to be present, you know, with them. How else can any of this stuff, you know, happen? I mean, my wife, seriously, I'm glad she's so stubborn and she does not, you know, give in to me left or, you know, we've been in tension for 30 years and I'm grateful for it, because I was not good at that stuff until I had to be, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, I know. I want to really dig a little bit deeper, and maybe Christy can help us out. When you say be present with people's differences, be present with people's anger, like, how do you do that? How do you sit there? You know, I know a number of people are getting stuff from their family who are so angry at them for voting for Hillary or voting for Donald Trump. Like, so how do you be present with that?
Honestly, it feels like a cop out to lots of my friends, but I don't know, somewhere however many years ago, it went away from me that very much is personal and that it's always, you know, somewhere related to these primary emotions and stuff that we were talking about, that whether it's fear, pain, you know, loneliness, regret, guilt, you know, whatever it would be that's present. I always, and it's easier for me just to say, everybody's broken is the thing. And so when I'm with those people, they're just broken in a different way than I'm broken, but we're all broken and nobody's better than the other or worse than the other or something like that. And so when I treat it as brokenness or as someone in pain, my natural, and I think most of our human natural reactions, is to simply say, nurture them, you know, be present with them, you know, do something other than just react back, you know, to the kinds of emotions that they share. So, again, it's 15 years of, you know, trial and error, and just somehow or other that kind of became me, at least. I'm not trying to be a bragger here or anything like that. I'm so enlightened, but honestly, I can't, you know, I don't call anybody evil. It's just not in me anymore, you know, to do it.
And I wonder, Christy, there's an element of codependency, perhaps. I'm not sure if I'm getting the terminology right, but it feels like a little bit codependent to want people to agree with you so desperately that you get so angry with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that has to do with our expectations about, you know, this desire for agreement. I would put a caveat in here about, you know, especially people who are attending church still, and or who are, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up next week, so they'll be sitting around a table with family who they disagree with, to just maybe manage our expectations about what's going to happen there. I mean, it's an instinctual human need. I don't know about codependency, more so just, I think it's innate in most of us to want validation, to want to be understood, to be accepted, you know, with all of our quirks and ideas, different, sometimes radical ideas, or just very divergent ideas from our family. And, you know, often that doesn't happen. So, by just, you know, being aware of, you know, what have been our expectations, for this relationship? Is it realistic? If not, how can I, you know, get this, how can it be fulfilled elsewhere? And I imagine for many, they might not find that at church, but to find a group where they can openly discuss, you know, their raw feelings and not be shot down for them. It, I think, could make church, you know, a less excruciating experience, because they're not expecting that from, you know, the guy sitting next to them in priesthood. Like, that's just probably not going to happen. So you're being, yeah, filled elsewhere. I'll just say that.
All right. It sounds like, so Dan, you're suggesting, like, voting for someone like maybe a family member voting for someone that you found reprehensible doesn't make them evil. Right. They'll have their reasons. And perhaps it behooves you to actually understand those reasons and to be clear about those reasons and accept them.
Yeah, or you know, find all the other things that I like to talk to them about, you know. So, I mean, as well, you know, if it comes up, obviously that's going to be my strategies, you know, and my self-talk and my concentration. But mostly I'm just hoping that it won't come up, you know. So I'm unlike everybody else, you know, I don't go seeking conflict.
Yeah. But you know what? How about trusting? You know, how can we trust people? I think this is what the crisis is. It's a crisis of trust in each other, isn't it? Like, I mean, it strikes me that what's happened is this broad.
Yeah. Will I be rejected?
You know? Yeah. Or just like, I can't trust somebody who's voted for a particular candidate that we shall not name, because that would mean that this person is this, that, and the next thing, and my heart is broken because I expected much more of them. So we've got a crisis of relationship because people don't trust each other anymore, because they are using these candidates as mirrors to see inside other people's hearts. But that isn't even, it's not even useful.
Right. Well, I'll give you my example. Oh, well, sorry, just a quick story. You know, the last 5-6 months when it was clear that, you know, Trump was going to be the person, you know, I'm with my in-laws, you know, we've probably had 4 or 5 conversations through the summer. And seriously, the depth at which they have chosen to vote for Trump is, I think we need change. You know, seriously, that is the level. He's at least going to shake things up. And yet these are people who've, you know, the American dream worked out just fine for them or all that stuff. But they're just not thinking about it. I'm sure, you know, when the really nasty things that he did and sort of the, you know, showing some character weaknesses and things like this, for them, I hope it registered. I'm not going to go fishing for this, but I don't think that... I'm in other words, I'm not looking at the totality of their life, or I'm not using their votes for Trump, you know, to be some big mirror or some big, you know, referendum on who they are as people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's powerful, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Christy, thoughts?
Yeah. Just that it's important to keep in mind that humans are irrational. We all are. And so we... none of us are, you know, completely going to do or vote or, you know, express opinions that are completely based on logic and fact. So, I think that can help us maybe take a step back and, you know, when tensions are high and you realize, okay, that is incredibly irrational. Yeah, I do that too. You know, the human mind is not a computer. You know, it does not work input output. You know, it's we do some really interesting things.
We're rational and a bit ridiculous, but you know, I just fall in love with people easily. You know, and even their silliness, I just fall in love with it. Like, you know, there's something kind of gorgeous about how kind of markedly irrational we are. But having said that, there are consequences that we need to attend to, social consequences, which I think calls for our presence, our physical presence, in spaces where there's going to be hurt. So that's the next thing I want to talk about. Like, what do we do now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say just on a really practical level to maybe take a social media break, take a Facebook break, you know, just in terms of not only self-care, but preserving relationships, because we, just in terms of what do we do, you know, if we spend a lot of time on our phones, it's not just, it could get us into some sticky situations and getting incredibly angry and then, you know, saying things that, you know, could hurt some relationships. Also, you know, the research is pretty clear on how social media is isolating. It leads to a lot of isolating emotions. So, I mean, it's kind of different, though. I mean, obviously, if social media is part of your job, you know, spend that time, you know, during business hours, you know, be on social media then. But make sure to take that time off. Just in terms of practical suggestions, if you're married or you have a partner, you know, give your phone to your partner. Or another thing that actually it works pretty well with clients, and I've tried it myself, is to go to settings and turn off the color on your phone, because then it's less. I mean, your brain isn't getting that dopamine rush from you know, new colorful stimuli, and that can help with taking that time that you would be spending on social media to, again, connect with people, connect with loved ones, to be, and as you said, be present, and, you know, really try to have, you know, some vulnerable conversations. And the research is pretty clear on that social media arguments hardly ever change anyone's mind. They just confirm our existing beliefs. Yeah. And make other people more defensive. So, but if we have any hope of you know, creating a positive dialogue to maybe change minds, to get people, you know, thinking about, you know, some of these, like, for example, social justice issues, you do that in an in-person conversation. So I would say, again, face-to-face conversations, connect. We as humans, we need this. We need this so badly, especially now more than ever, I think.
Okay. Dan, what do you think?
Frame the question one more time for me. Just where do we go next? The doing part?
What do we do?
Yeah, like, you know, what do we do? Because I think that often an intention, like, you know, when we ever get an event like this happened, if we pay attention, there is an intention that becomes present in us that asks us for our body to be drawn towards something to heal the world in one way or another. So I suppose the question is, post this election, how, you know, instead of sitting on, as you say, Christy, instead of sitting on Facebook and just thinking that you're changing the world by a Facebook comment, what else can we do?
Yeah.
To honor our body and our soul's need to show up for something bigger than ourselves.
That's a good fit with actually something that I definitely thought it might come in today. So let me at least throw that part and we'll see if I'm in your ballpark here. You know, there's this, you know, first of all, I guess my initial thing is, number one, let's not give into despair. And number two, again, maybe it's sort of in this intellectual framing thing a little bit too, Gina, just to simply say, what is true peace? True peace is not to be an attentionless state. You know, true peace is not to be in the absence of conflict. True peace really comes from when we feel like our values and our actions are aligned with something that's worthy of us, that's worthy of the human spirit, that's worthy of a fight, that's possibly even worthy of wearing out our lives in front, you know, for. You know, that's where Viktor Frankl, you know, his whole, you know, man's search for meaning, you know, stuff. He, of course, would say the human search for meaning or something now, I'm sure, if he were writing in this day and age. But it was, you know, what is it that you're living for that's positive you? And if you can do that, then you can handle the tension. You can handle the turmoil around you because you're centered in that value and that purpose. So in some ways, what I did want to say today, if more than anything else, is, you know, nothing changed between a week ago Tuesday and today in terms of what I'm committed to and the kinds of values that I'm committed to in the world. Like I said, you know, that next day and, you know, even that night and, you know, I'm cussing up a storm and, or just, you know, reacting however I would. I'm not necessarily cussing, but I was, you know, getting sarcastic and all those kinds of things. But the true emotion was, oh, the world's now harder than it was before for me to do these same things that I was already committed to. And so there's a little bit of a grieving process, a little bit of a, you know, regrouping, trying to find my energy. And like I mentioned, I'm 8 days past it and I'm still not, you know, running on all cylinders. You know, I'm feeling it in my body and I'm feeling the sadness of just a harder road, but nothing's changed in terms of my sense of who I am, what I'm here on earth for, that I'm in alignment with good things, that, you know, my principles that, you know, I want to fight for are good ones and worthy ones. And so I'm just willing to stay in that conflict. So that's my whole thing. Don't despair. Nothing has changed with you other than perhaps, you know, you're reeling from a blow, but eventually get it back and find your way forward.
So I've got a question then. What's centering you, Dan? What would you put your boxing gloves on for?
Oh, well,
I love what you said, but envisage you doing something.
Well, I mean, my spiritual centering, just to let you know, it's so weird. It moved from, you know, God, you know, language of God and you know, truth and all that stuff. Because the more I've had spiritual experiences, they've always been about connection. And I love that the Mormon universe, if we think about what its metaphysic is, this matches with it so well. It's the intrinsic value of all things. Everything in the world has its own value in and for itself, that it should be always treated as an end in itself and not just as a means to our end, right? So throw a little Kantian philosophy in there with it. But so my centering is in those things. And so there's not the things that I go to battle for is I will never let gay bashing go, you know, in my presence. You know, that's just been a fundamental thing. But I'll also not let somebody talk about themselves as a failure, as a loser, or God as an asshole, you know, too. So I'll fight for those kinds of things. So when it comes to the political arena and things like this, I am all for everybody having chances to do it. And I do see the systemic problems that have put people in cycles of dependency and a non-fair shake. And so I'm always wanting to work for those things. Now, as I said before, sometimes I've been a little more eggheady and not done the real work. But I sense with this election and its high, high stakes, at least if he were to act, or this administration were to act the way that some of those things were thrown out there in the campaign, man, I'm going to work. I'm going to work on all of them. I'm going to fight every single one of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but honestly, connection and intrinsic worth of everybody, everything, the planet, animals, you know, I'm there.
Right, right. And it feels like the boxing ring got smaller. That it's not shadow boxing with yourself anymore. Actually, there are some real issues on the line and at stake that people are going to have to show up physically for.
Yeah. And the fact, you know, partly what Trump was running on was, is almost like, I will be able to do this because, you know, I'm a business mogul and I always get my way because I'm the head of the company or something. And there are certainly some things that the President of the United States can do unilaterally, but, you know, he's not going to be able to get done all the different, you know, hard things that he did. And I think that's going to be a big awakening in there. But whenever they do push one of those extreme ones, man, we more than ever just have to, you know, I don't mind the protests and things that are happening around there and saying, you know, he's not my president. But I'm more interested in who will show up when Muslim registration becomes a real thing, you know, that's really being fought for, you know, or really being trying to be implemented. It's those kinds of things where I'm going to be so much more aware now than I was when it was just sort of these fuzzy, you know, trends this way or that way versus these really unilateral feeling actions.
Nice. And so we've kind of covered again, but really, and I'm mindful of this this saying, in thinking, clarity, in feeling, inwardness, and in will, perseverance. It's sort of a holy trinity that apprehends both our minds and our hearts and our bodies. And so what we've really talked about, we've gone across a whole spectrum of ways in which we can respond to this election outcome, however we see it, with purpose and goodwill and integration, all parts of ourselves integrated, so that we're not floundering in the kind of confusion and mess that this may have created, that any social disruption creates for people, because this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with social complexity and a massive upheaval, and there is a way through it, I think, was what we're all saying, are we not?
Yeah.
Good stuff. So, Gina, what about you? I mean, you're in New Zealand. What's your way of acting when you see America doing things? What's different in your determinations?
I suppose that, you know, America is big enough to have a massive influence. And I suppose that my intellectual part of me says, well, this is the outcome of neoliberalism. It's kind of where my head is ideologically dealing with the question of neoliberalism and its massive effects on nation states like ours and yours and England. I mean, Brexit's part of it. So this is my thinking part. I'm theorizing this. That's really, really helpful. In terms of my feeling part of it, I've been fearful, but really, really worried for people who, and particularly the innocent, who are going to suffer mostly for this. You know, I'm talking about religious and ethnic and racial minorities and women who are going to be suffering. And so that motivates me to consider how I'm going to apply, where my body is going to take me in terms of the work that I will do on behalf of those who are suffering the most. And I suppose the other thing that really worries me is the environment. That's been occupying my thoughts a lot recently. That really, really concerns me as a New Zealander. There's a lot to do, but I suppose in integrating each of those, I really like what you say, is that if you've integrated these parts of yourself with integrity, actually that's where the peace is. So at the moment, there's a 7,000-mile difference between us, but I feel a sense of peace and kind of excitement, notwithstanding the worry, that we get to show up for a very, very big and pressing cause. That, as I say, the boxing rings just got smaller and we're brought face to face with each other. We can't kind of retreat to corners where we're invisible. This makes it an urgent conversation for us to have. And so that's pretty, as somebody who kind of fights at the margins, it's pretty exciting.
Great. Mm-hmm. Good perspective. Fun to have those in my
Excellent.
Head.
Okay. So, well, thank you very much. This, as we have said at the beginning, has been a podcast. And we've been processing the aftermath of the United States election. I've been speaking to Christy Money from Mormon Transitions and Dan Witherspoon from Mormon Matters, and this will be co-hosted on each of our podcasts. So I appreciate everybody's time. Thank you, Dan and Christy.
Hey, it was so fun.
Thank you, Gina. Always lovely.
And everybody, as you comment in our comment sections, do a little better than I did, which was a couple times I went a little partisan or a little personal there, but I would just urge us all to take it as the bigger issues here rather than the specifics of particular candidates or things, and do it and hopefully our comments will be about self-care and tips for how we're doing things and how we're recovering our energy and our determinations and things. That would just be my hope.
Yeah, exactly. And I keep saying in my comments, my responses to comments is like systems thinking, not personality thinking.
Nice. Yeah, good. And then the other thing is, hey, all three of us rely on donations from podcast listeners, don't we?
We do. So let's. And if all of our podcast listeners just gave like 50 cents or a dollar, that would be awesome.
Holy smokes. It would be totally cool. But
would it?
Yeah, so do everybody please find the buttons on our podcast pages that say donate or subscribe, and you know, if this is helpful in your life, please please do it. We're trying to I don't know. I feel like we're all doing good work. You know what I mean? It's worthy work of our efforts. And if you feel that way too, and you can vote a little bit with your dollars, that was so helpful to all of us.
It would be. Okay, we're over and out.
Thanks.